Thank you for joining us. This is the Fisheries Podcast, a weekly podcast that shares the stories of the amazing people and projects that make up fisheries science. If you haven't already, follow the podcast on social media at Fisheries Pod. If you are the generous sort, you can be like Brian, Jody, Jerry, Garrett, Ben, Janet, and John, who all support the podcast on Patreon. Through Patreon, you are able to support the show with either a recurring or one-time donation, which helps us pay for various parts of the show. If that isn't your thing, you can also purchase Fisheries Pod merch on our Teespring store if you feel inclined, so check it out. My name is Preston Crisman, and I am looking forward to catching up with our guest today, Seth Miko. Seth is currently the sport fish management biologist for the North Carolina Wildlife Resource Commission's District 5, located in the north central Piedmont area of the state. His district covers several of the lakes and rivers to the north and west of the state's capital city of Raleigh, with Seth working on some of the best largemouth bass and crappie fisheries within the whole state. Seth began his fisheries career path at Clemson University, where he earned a bachelor's degree in 2013 and later returned to earn his master's degree in 2017. He worked a stint as a fisheries technician for the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources in between his degrees, and then landed with NCWRC in 2017. Seth is an avid bass fisherman who enjoys pursuing big fish for both work and pleasure. So welcome to the podcast, Seth.
Hey, Preston. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, I'm happy to catch up with you. All right, let's start off simple. Where did you grow up and what drew your interest into considering the pursuit of a career in fisheries management?
So I grew up on a fair amount of acreage just south of Greenville, South Carolina. We had a small, less than an acre farm pond there, and I think I was chucking night crawlers in that pond by the time I was 3 to 5 years old. You know,
Oh,
go
yeah.
out there after school, or you know, have my dad take me down there and go fishing on the weekend. So I've been fishing pretty much my whole life, and that eventually evolved into a love of fish biology. So,
Gotcha. All right. Tell us about your work when you were a fisheries technician for the South Carolina DNR in between your two degrees.
yeah, so I worked on two major projects down there. My first official job in fisheries was with the statewide stream assessment as part of the stream team there in South Carolina. So we did three pass depletion sampling, and mainly along the coastal plain there in South Carolina. So that was a statewide effort. I was mainly involved in the coastal plain, but it was a statewide effort just to catalog all the stream assemblages throughout the whole state. And then after that, I went on to work at Strom Thurmond Reservoir, which is one of the last lakes in the Savannah chain. And they had just installed an oxygen injection system, liquid oxygen injection system in the lower end of that lake. So we had some stripers tagged, and we tracked how those stripers were moving in relation to that increased fisheries habitat down there in the lower end of the lake.
Okay. So then what led you to want to go back and get your master's degree?
The field work was fun, but I was really beginning to grow a love for data and data analysis. So the more I dabbled with that, the more I just said, you know, maybe I'll make the jump and learn more about this full-fledged biology thing and learn how to analyze data and really, really take it from field work to full-fledged report.
Okay. So then was it always, you were always interested in going back to Clemson, or did you look around at some other schools too?
I did. Looked around at several other universities, but I was able to leverage my, you know, I'd already been working for the DNR for a couple of years at that point.
Yeah.
But I was able to leverage my connections there to be able to use their equipment in conjunction for my advisor there. He didn't have a lot of equipment when I got going, so I was able to use a lot of the DNR's equipment.
Awesome.
At Clemson and kind of do a dual thing there as a student and you know, not officially working for the DNR, but still working with those biologists and their equipment closely.
Yeah, that's a nice
Grad
smooth
school.
Transition.
Yeah.
All right. So there were a few components to your thesis project, if I remember correctly, both of which involve smallmouth bass here in South Carolina, which is not something that people think about a whole lot. So if you would, please tell us about the movement part of your study first.
Yeah, so we radio tagged some smallmouth bass there just south of Gaffney. There's a run of the river dam, just a old dam with a powerhouse there on the broad river. And we tagged, I think, oh, it's been a while now. I think we tagged close to 40 individuals. And we tracked them all up and down the river in relation to how they were managing that powerhouse there at the dam. And we also had a big hurricane that come through and really threw a wrench into some of that data. Hurricane Matthew rolled through and really threw some of our fish for a loop during that
I remember that.
time frame.
So then now for my absolute favorite part of your thesis project, if you could tell the listeners about the abundance estimate portion of your thesis, and if you could be sure to place special emphasis on which specific canoe always brought you the most target specimens for your project.
Yeah, so the one of the best methods for catching fish out of that river was just angling.
That's right.
So we got, geez, we had probably what 15 or 16 of us and a couple people in canoes and
Yeah.
kayaks going down the river,
It was a
dragging
tough few
fish.
days to be at work,
And
let me tell you.
then we tried to recapture those fish, but I think we tagged most of them before that hurricane rolled through. And we didn't recapture a ton. We had to use a lot of Bayesian methods on the back end to really get a decent estimate of that population size. But we definitely probably could have gotten a better estimate without that hurricane coming and ruining our party.
The river flooded there for a couple weeks after that.
Yeah, a lot of our fish had to have gone downstream because we never saw 80% of them again.
And then so you were doing angling to mark them, and the plan was to do angling to recapture, and then with
It
the
was.
high water, angling became less feasible, so then we supplemented with some boat electrofishing, right?
Yeah. And those days were hours and hours of shocking water looking for those fish. We didn't really recapture many at all. I'm sure you can remember those recapture days where we were hoping and praying we'd run into a few of them.
I had just a quick anecdote that I thought of. I have this memory that is just vividly seared into my brain of we dropped off a batch of fish to you, and then heard you say that some of these smallmouth bass looked funny, like they had some hybridization going on. And sure enough, we should have probably been looking at that much sooner, even way back then, because that river, especially that portion, is now probably 50 or 60% hybrids with invasive Alabama bass and even Bartram's bass, which are also not native to that basin, making up the other portions of that population. So, listeners, you just use this as a reminder. Always trust your gut if you see something that doesn't look right. All right. So you earned your master's degree at Clemson in 2017. So what was your next step?
Actually, that spring I was finishing up, I came up to North Carolina and interviewed for two different positions were open at the time. It was the district I'm in currently. It was the district biologist one position there. And then I think three was open at the time as well, district three to my northeast. So I interviewed for both of those and ended up landing in district five and been there ever since. And I've since gained one rung up the ladder since then.
Okay.
Going on 7 years ago now.
All right. So you're thrown into a management biologist role. So what's your kind of typical annual field season cycle? And then if you could just throw out a few of the better well-known water bodies that you manage in District 5.
Yeah, our biggest reservoir is Jordan Lake, just west of Raleigh. So Jordan is our biggie, and then we have Hyco and Mayo, which is going up towards the Virginia border. And so usually in the spring we'll get ramped up with our spring electrofishing, which is mainly largemouth bass, and then our broodstock collections for our hybrid striped bass stockings. We're mainly looking for a female striped bass when we collect those brood fish. And then we roll into summertime and we do a ton of habitat enhancement work here in District 5. So we do native aquatic plantings, we do, abiotic fish tracker work, and a lot of that all summer long. And then roll into the fall where we bust out the trap nets and do all our crappie surveys. We have some very popular crappie fisheries here in the Piedmont that really, really get fished a lot. And then we have a few hybrid fisheries in my district. So we're in wintertime we're gill netting for hybrids primarily.
All right, another topic that you wanted to discuss today was you're doing your trap net sampling out there on some of your lakes, and you guys are noticing some pretty interesting stuff with some of the crappie you're catching. So why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, so as we're tallying our white and our black crappie proportions, we're noticing fish that don't necessarily look solely like a white or solely like a black crappie. And We're wondering if maybe there's some hybridization going on with those two species. And at the face of it, it seems like those hybrids do seem to have a little more of that hybrid vigor to them as well.
Okay.
They seem to be, a bit better than average fish, especially in some of our small reservoirs, less than 1,000 acres. So that's something we're really looking in, starting to look into to
Okay.
see,
And I know there's some commercial viability for the hybrid crappie for people to put in ponds, but you guys think these are naturally producing hybrids?
It's to our knowledge, they've never truly been stocked in these reservoirs,
Yeah.
and they'd seem to be just hybridizing somewhat naturally in those systems that have both species in those reservoirs.
Interesting.
So I'm not sure exactly what's driving that, but it's definitely something that we've seen here and there in some of our small lakes. These lakes are probably 600, 700 acres, a lot of them.
Okay. So you mentioned a few additional projects to me when we were preparing for this interview. So you said you were recently working on a white bass telemetry study. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, so Falls Lake, which is just north of Raleigh, it has a pretty robust white bass population, and they make these big spring runs up both of the main tributaries that feed that reservoir. And we had this initial research question to find out exactly where those fish were spawning in those rivers. So we hydroacoustic tagged 80 individuals. And we put a receiver array in both rivers, both the Flat and the Eno River, which flow into that reservoir. And we tracked those fish for 3 springs. We had tags at large for 3 years, from spring of 2020 through 2023. And then we were able to see where those fish were choosing to spawn, how far up each river they were going, and if they were spawning exactly where we thought they were. And we kind of nailed it on the head, where a lot of those fish were spawning in the riffle habitat, so we anticipated them to spawn at. So I'm
Okay.
mining through a lot of that data as we speak, and figuring out exactly how many fish return to each river, the tag fidelity, site fidelity, and things like that.
Okay. Another project you mentioned is dealing with an F1 bass stocking program. So, what is an F1 bass? Why are they desirable? Who are they desirable to? And why are you putting them into one of your reservoirs?
Yeah, so that initially started with some pressure from the anglers. They've really seen other states have success with F1s. Virginia's done these F1 stockings where they'll take a pure northern bass and they'll cross it with a pure Florida bass, and then they stock those offspring from those brood fish. So that caught on in Smith Mountain Lake initially. And then march south to North Carolina from there. We started doing it at Norman around 2019, I want to say it was. And then that just marched across the state from there, where more anglers wanted to see it at more lakes. So we wanted to kind of control it as a pseudo experiment, where we're not just stocking fish across the state. So we chose a lycotrophic lake, a mesotrophic lake, and a eutrophic lake.
Okay.
The eutrophic lake being the one in my district, Jordan Lake, and we're going to see if those fish fare differently in those various systems there.
Okay.
So,
So what, I mean, what's driving this, the angler interest? Like, why do they care about putting an F1 bass out?
that they hope that they will grow faster and bite more readily. So that Florida bass genetic's supposed to have the growth potential from the Florida and the ferocity of the northern bass. So it's supposed to be the best of both worlds, where you
Okay.
have a fast growing aggressive fish. And
It's right.
there's a lot of pressure from our North Carolina anglers to stock those fish.
Well, I'll say once North Carolina started it, we started hearing a lot about it
So
down here too. So we have not started yet. We've been able to push that off for now, but we'll see. All right. So you just touched on the F1 bass stocking program. So but some anglers have taken matters into their own hands when it comes to moving fish around. So you guys are seeing some angler movement of fish in your area?
Yeah, much like South Carolina and Georgia are seeing, we're seeing these Alabama bass, which we now know are a distinct species from the spotted bass. You know, everybody used to call them spotted bass, but these Alabama spotted bass are now getting moved throughout the state. They're hopping from one lake to another, and we're seeing a lot of angler movement there. We know that we've never stocked them in any of these reservoirs, so they seem to be popping up across the state from angler introductions, and we're trying to make sure that everybody out there knows that they might be in some of these reservoirs now, but we don't want them leaving the ones they're in. They just need to make sure that the fish stay where they're at, and we hope that that doesn't continue as time goes on.
The Alabama bass are devastating the fisheries in my region right now, both largemouth fisheries and smallmouth. So I completely concur with not moving those things any more than what they've already been.
Yeah. It's funny because, you know, it depends on what your definition of good is. There's a big contingency out there that says that they kind of made Lake Norman fish better, and you know, you catch more fish at Lake Norman now, but I don't think it's good for any of those fish to be moving around.
And maybe in a vacuum that maybe it did improve it at Lake Norman, but now I'm downstream of Lake Norman, so now
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
ruining Lake Wylie, and it's moving, and eventually that same river flows into Santee Cooper, which is a world famous trophy bass fishery. So who knows what's going to happen when those things get in there? So that's the thing with these fish. So, you know, they're nothing operates in a vacuum.
Yeah.
So our listeners may not be aware, but the North Carolina WRC has its own podcast called Better Fishing with Two Bald Biologists. They do a fantastic job of using their knowledge about the science of fisheries to try to help the common angler catch more fish. I'm an avid listener of that show, and I recommend giving it a listen. However, they had Seth on as a guest last year to talk about largemouth bass fishing, and they anointed you with the title of the Bass Fishing Biologist. So I got two questions. One, why haven't you changed your social media handle to reflect that honor? And then two, please tell us just how you spend your free time in such a way that this unofficial title was deemed to be bestowed upon you and worthy.
Yep, so I've had a bass boat now for close to 10 years probably, and been dabbling in the tournament scene here and there.
Okay.
And Corey and Ben both know that I do that a good bit on Saturdays, so they kind of dubbed me the bass fishing biologist. I don't have the tournament accolades per se to really have that title, but I'm
Well, I thought it was worthy to bring up. All
definitely I'll throw my hat in a tournament every once in a while.
right. I know you and I have chatted about this recently, so I think I know the answer, but do you think being an angler makes you a better biologist?
Yeah, I think so. It definitely keep you in the loop on what the concerns are. Sure, I have guys messaging me all the time with things they're seeing on Lake X, you know, that they're concerned about, or something growing here that they're concerned about, and so it'll definitely keep your ear to the ground, so to speak.
Okay. And then co conversely, do you think being a biologist makes you a better angler?
I think yes and no. It definitely will tell you the areas to target
Right.
in most cases, but even still, when you go back to those areas where you can sample a lot of good big fish, you might not necessarily be able to sample them good with a rod and reel as you can in the electric
That's
fishing
right.
boat.
It
So,
makes you realize how bad of a fisherman you actually are. All right. Another topic you wanted to discuss was some of your angler outreach efforts. So if you could enlighten us there.
yeah, so after there was so much public pressure, so to speak, for F1 stocking, we figured that we'd get out and really talk to bass anglers face to face and show them that we are doing other things other than stocking bass for them. So we've gotten out we've went to tournaments and talked to them about our habitat enhancement work, and we've went to bass club meetings and just talked to them face to face. So it's been good for me, you know, to reach out to those guys and just show them that we are on their team. There seems to be a kind of an us versus them with the general angling community, where they think we're the big bad wolf that's trying to decimate their fishery. But one thing we're trying to do in North Carolina is just show the anglers that we're here to help them. We're working for them, and that we're on their team. So that's something that we've done a lot in my district, just to get out face to face and speak to those guys, and not only tell them what we're doing, but also hear their concerns and make sure that they feel heard as well.
Yeah, that's great, 'cause we see a lot of similar, mentalities with our bass anglers down here in South Carolina. So that's great that you're kind of getting out there and showing them, we may have said no to stocking fish, but these are the other things we're doing for your bass fishing.
And
So that's great.
some of those lakes that they want stocking in might not necessarily even
Right.
benefit at all from more fish being in them. So we definitely are trying to remind them that harvest can be a good thing for some of those fisheries as well.
That's right. All right. And then following up right there with your bass angler outreach, you guys do a lot of family fishing type events too?
Yeah, so a lot of the municipal reservoirs in my district are ran by city government, and especially in summertime, they'll have, youth fishing rodeos and fishing events for the people of the county or city to come out and just fish for a day and learn. Some of them are even, it's their first time ever even fishing in a lake or in a pond. So we'll go out and we'll help bait hooks and take fish off the hook, and it's really cool to see, a 2 or 3 year old boy catching his first fish, just like I was back in the day.
Oh
So
yeah.
that's something I've really, really enjoyed helping with, to go out
Yep.
to the city parks and help with the youth anglers and people who might not necessarily get to fish all the time, help them learn how to fish and learn that, some of these fishing resources are literally 2 miles down the street. They don't have to go to a big reservoir. They could go to a small park and catch a few fish. So it's been quite rewarding.
Great. All right. I plan to ask every guest I interview these next two questions. So if you hadn't gone into the fisheries field, what would you think you've been doing for your career?
Oh, I think I'd probably be in some form of boat rigging or some form of marine industry. Ever since I owned a boat, I've been tinkering with, adding things here and changing things there. So I'd probably be working at a marine dealership somewhere rigging boats for people.
Okay, cool. Finally, if you would just leave us with some piece of good advice, just general life advice, or if you got a little nugget you think students or early career professionals might need to hear, the floor is yours.
I think it's important that you can always remember you can learn from everybody. So of course that means you can learn from your professors and your colleagues, but you can also learn from the guy at the boat ramp who just got off the lake fishing for 8 hours. He can probably teach you something too. So
Yeah.
just don't forget you can learn from anybody you come in contact with.
That's right. Keep an open mind for sure. All right, Seth, now the tough part of the interview is over. We're down to the final five questions. This is a group of five questions that we ask each of the guests that come on the show. We always start pretty simple with what is your favorite fish?
Got to be the largemouth bass.
Oh yeah, it's the bass fishing biologist. What is your favorite memory from your career so far?
Oh, that would have to be the day that we had to try to push pull a jumbo over a shoal in the Eno River. So
Okay.
we were trying to get up to this section just above this shoal where we wanted to try to shock for some white bass, and the river was just a little too low, so I got out and waded through the water and tried to push and shove this boat over some rocks, and we finally got it over and got up there and got some fish in the boat. So that was a proud moment of perseverance
Yeah,
to
perseverance.
get to the place we wanted to sample.
Okay. What is your dream job or dream location?
Think I'm in it. Being the bass fishing biologist,
Yeah, that's right.
I'm surrounded by several good reservoirs with high quality largemouth fisheries. So I'm definitely not complaining there.
Okay. If money was not an issue, what is one project that you would like to work on?
I want to get, especially in our high pressured fisheries, I want to boil down to to exactly what impact that post-release mortality is having in our North Carolina fishery, especially the high-pressured ones that are small lakes with a lot of anglers, and just figure out to what level that, that pressure is having on our smaller lakes here in the state.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that'd be a lot of tags to put in the lake and a lot of incentives for anglers. So that'd probably require a lot of high budget to get that done.
If there was one point or principle that you could have programmed into everyone's head, what would it be?
Oh, probably that your estimates are only as good as your data. My grad work really showed me that you gotta have good data to get good estimates.
All right, Seth, thank you for coming on the podcast today. It was a pleasure hearing about you and all of your work. If people want to find out more information or to get a hold of you, how would they do that?
Best route would probably be my email. It'd be just Seth, Seth dot Myko, Myko at ncwildlife.org.
Perfect. And I will add that to the show notes so they can look it up there too. If you would like to get a hold of me, you can find us on social media at Fisheries Pod or old-fashioned email feedback@thefisheriespodcast.com. I hope that you enjoyed this episode. You can download past, present, and future episodes on your favorite listening app or stream it from Spotify or thefisheriespodcast.com. And don't forget, you can help support the podcast with a monthly contribution through Patreon or by rocking some awesome Fisheries Podcast logo shirts, hoodies, and stickers available on Teespring. I'm Preston. Thank you for listening to the Fisheries Podcast. And remember, your estimates are as only as good as your data.